Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Student Press Law Center's monthly podcast. The Student Press Law Center is an advocate for the rights of student journalists and the educators who work with them. The SPLC provides resources about the legal rights of journalists on its website, splc.org. We're on Twitter at SPLC, and we're always happy to take your questions about the law. The easiest way to reach us is by email, splc@splc.org. The author John Krakauer is well known for the bestseller Into the Wild, and to many of us longtime fans of Outside Magazine as sort of America's premier travel and adventure writers, is an unlikely person to be carrying the flag for the transparency of records from college campuses, but nevertheless, we're here to talk about a case initiated by Mr. Krakauer involving public records from the University of Montana system that has the potential to reverberate nationwide and to influence the way that colleges process requests for public records. This case involves an issue of great salience on all college campuses around the country, that is, the way that our institutions of higher education are responding to accusations of sexual assault. With us to talk about the Krakauer case, which was recently decided by the Montana Supreme Court, is probably the premier media and First Amendment lawyer in the state, Mike Malloy. Mike Malloy is a former member of the Montana legislature, where he was credited with being one of the forefathers of Montana's open meetings statute, as well as helping draft and enact the state constitutional right to know provision, making Montana one of a relatively few states that actually memorializes the public's right to information right in its state constitution. Mike Malloy is the lawyer you call when you are a journalist in Montana and believe that your right of access has been violated. He's based in Helena, Montana, and we're so pleased to have him with us as a guest on our podcast. So thanks for joining us, Mike.
I'm happy to do it.
Let me get started by just asking you to set us up with the factual background. Mr. Krakauer makes a request for public records and is denied by the University of Montana system, and that tees up the court case we're here to talk about. What is the set of records that he's after, and what does he plan to do with them? Why does he want them?
Well, Mr. Krakauer was doing a book on rape on university campuses across the nation and had sort of focused on the University of Montana, where the problem was sufficiently large that the Justice Department had come in to investigate the athletic department. During the course of his investigation for his book, he became aware that a student had filed a complaint with the University of Montana Dean of Students alleging that the star football coach for the University of Montana Grizzlies had raped her.
Or the star football player, actually, right? The star football player, a guy named Jordan Johnson, right?
Yeah. Yes, Jordan Johnson. The process at the University of Montana for dealing with rape on campus was for the Dean of Students to talk to both the alleged rapist and the student and make a determination about whether the rape actually occurred. That was performed by the Dean of Students, who decided that it had occurred, and he recommended that Mr. Johnson be expelled. The process then permits the student who is grieved, in this case Mr. Johnson, to appeal that to the vice president of the university, and then to a university court, which is composed of both faculty and students. Mr. Johnson did appeal it. The vice president affirmed the dean of students. He had a hearing before this university court, which then heard testimony from everyone involved in the situation, and concluded that Mr. Johnson did indeed rape this student, and determined unanimously to expel him. This, under the process, this decision is then reviewed by the president, of the university who did review it and sent Mr. Johnson a letter saying, you are expelled. That determination of the president can then be appealed to the Commissioner of Higher Education, which Mr. Johnson did, and the university, the last that we know about this is that the university commissioner decided that the whole matter should be sent back to the university and reversed the expulsion. We just don't know why. And Mr. Krakauer, in the course of his research on his book, asked the Commissioner of Higher Education for all documents related to his decision. The commissioner refused to even acknowledge that such records existed based on FERPA, and so Mr. Krakauer was forced to commence litigation in state district court based on the constitutional right of privacy that you mentioned earlier. That's
so
the background.
These are records that reflect, in particular, the set of records that Mr. Krakauer is most interested in are those reflecting how the Commissioner of Higher Education reached the decision to overturn the findings of the disciplinary board at the campus level. When the request is made, and this is going to sound familiar to any journalist who has tried to get public records from a school or a college before, the institution responds on the basis of student confidentiality. And one of the sources of students' right of privacy is FERPA, the federal privacy statute, which so frequently is invoked as a means of obstructing requests for public records. So this is a case that tees up in some ways the expansiveness or the narrowness of FERPA as it regards records of an appeal of a disciplinary hearing where potentially quite serious criminal conduct is at issue. So the university system is going to argue, as they did, that these are Mr. Johnson's education records and therefore confidential. What is your response and Mr. Krakauer's response to the privacy argument?
Well, before we even get to the privacy argument, the issue of whether or not FERPA prevents a custodian of a government record in Montana had been resolved by the Montana Supreme Court years earlier in a case in which a school board refused to give records of a disciplinary effort they made on some students. And the Supreme Court said that FERPA doesn't even apply when the records are turned over in redacted form. So since Mr. Krakauer was willing to take these records in redacted form, the question of whether or not FERPA had any impact at all had previously been resolved by the court. However, the commissioner came back and said, no, the Department of Education has adopted a rule which provides that if the requester knows the identity of the student, then all bets are off, no records can be released, because in fact the person would know the identity of the person who was referred to in the records, even if they were released in redacted form. And of course that creates a conundrum which can never really be resolved, and one which was addressed in detail by Mr. Krakauer before the district court and in the Supreme Court, because that was the primary defense tendered by the commissioner.
Right. And this is what's called the Department of Education's targeted request rule. This is a rule that was adopted several years ago to prevent something like a person going to a school and saying, I'd like to see Johnny Smith's report card, but you can take Johnny Smith's name off of it before you give it to me. Obviously, at that point, that doesn't really conceal Johnny's identity because you know who Johnny is. You knew who he was when you made the request. And at the time that the department enacted this rule, a lot of us in the news media industry warned them that this is exactly the result that would happen, that when you had cases that were of very high-profile nature, highly newsworthy, involving very well-known people whose cases had been in the media, it would be almost impossible to disguise their identities in requesting access to their records, and that this is exactly the way the rule would be used, that it winds up with the kind of counterintuitive result that the more famous somebody is and the more that is known about their case and the more that has already become public knowledge, the more private it is regarded under federal privacy law, which doesn't seem to make a lot of logical sense, but that's where we are right now in the view of the Department of Education. So this goes to a state trial court in Montana. When you sue under the Open Records Act, you go to a state court and not federal court. And so describe how the state trial court resolved the matter.
Well, the issue before the trial court was to follow the usual Supreme Court legal analysis in looking at open records cases, and that is to determine whether or not there is any individual privacy involved in the records. And if so, will society recognize that right of privacy to be reasonable? And if the answer to both of those questions is yes, then the court balances the right of privacy against the merits of public disclosure as required by the Constitution. So when we went to the district court, we asked the court to take into consideration that almost everything about Mr. Johnson's case, including his disciplinary process up to the commissioner, as well as an entire rape trial that had occurred in public, and given the fact that he was maybe one of the most celebrated athletes in Montana during that time period, that there were no privacy rights, and that there wasn't any basis under the Montana Constitution to withhold the documents. The district court agreed with us and determined that FERPA only restricted a systematic disclosure, did not restrict a case-by-case disclosure, and reconciled the Montana constitutional provision with FERPA and ordered release of the records.
Right, and 2 points bear repeating there. First of all, that this matter didn't just go before a confidential university disciplinary proceeding. It also went through a very public and high-profile criminal trial, which ended, by the way, with a not guilty verdict against Mr. Johnson using the standards of a beyond a reasonable doubt criminal proceeding. And so all of the salient facts about who was accused of doing what had already been very much aired in the public square by the time of this litigation of the record. The other point that Mike mentioned is FERPA, by its own terms, if you read the statute, forbids a policy or pattern or practice of failing to secure people's education records. It certainly can be read as saying that it applies only to a systemic and habitual pattern of disclosing records and not to a one-off response to a public records request, and doubly so when there is minimal privacy interest because of the unique circumstances as there were here. So the state, not wishing to accede to the district court's order to disclose the records, then appeals. The case was argued earlier in 2016 by the Montana Supreme Court, which just recently, in September of 2016, came down with its ruling. Describe how the Montana Supreme Court ruled.
Well, surprisingly, not surprisingly, the Supreme Court ruled that Mr. Krakauer had rights, even though he was a resident of Colorado, had rights under the Montana Constitution to obtain access to documents, agreed with us that, and the district court, that unless there was a systematic disclosure of records, the FERPA did not prevent disclosure. But then seemed to be troubled by the fact that the court, the district court, didn't actually review the records. Usually in Montana, the process involves the state district court receiving the records in camera, that is, in chambers, and reviewing them to determine whether there are any privacy implications in the records and to decide which portions of them should be released. That's the way it usually happens. But in this case, because the commissioner determined that FERPA prevented him from even acknowledging he had such records, he couldn't give those, he couldn't give any records to the district court. So, and that was fine with me because I thought that the privacy issue was so clear that we didn't need to look at records, that they should all be disclosed. But the Supreme Court seemed to be concerned about that and sent it back to the district court and ordered the district court to do this in-camera review. What the district court, or what the Supreme Court did not do, unfortunately, was address this targeted request rule. It didn't address, it didn't tell the district court how they were, how the district court was supposed to do this review, whether or not the privacy rights under FERPA are any different from privacy rights that are generally contemplated under our constitutional provision. And so we're sort of back to, we're a little bit back to square one before the district court.
Right. And that makes it especially difficult in a situation like this one, because if you took FERPA out of the equation, if you took the federal privacy law off the table, and you were just analyzing this as a matter of state public records law with the overlay of the Montana Constitution, the judge would engage in a balancing test. This is typically the way issues like this get resolved where there is a claim of privacy. The judge would look at whether the claim of privacy was reasonable and whether there were extenuating circumstances. In this case, there are plenty. You're talking about a very well-known athlete who's already been through a public criminal trial, and so there's every chance that with if FERPA were not an issue, that the judge would come down on the side of disclosure under these unique circumstances as occurred at the district court level. Now when you introduce FERPA into the mix, it is less clear that FERPA is waivable by conduct or that it is possible to override FERPA upon a finding that the records are of special public interest and importance. So the guidance to the district court is certainly less than completely clear on that point. And I suppose it's possible that we could find ourselves back in front of the appellate courts again if the district court were to once again direct disclosure and the state were to be dissatisfied with that result.
And that's particularly true because the Supreme Court didn't provide any guidance to the district court about how it should consider the balancing test in the light of FERPA. And I think we're going to also have an argument before the district court about whether or not FERPA will prevail over the Montana Constitution based on either a preemption argument or based on the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Sebelius. We argued all of those in the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court didn't address any of those issues, and they are, I think, they're critical issues to get resolved along with the targeted request rule so that the courts in Montana at least can know how they're supposed to read FERPA in conjunction with the Montana constitutional right to know provision.
You mentioned the Sebelius issue just by way of background to those listening. The U.S. Supreme Court decided in the Sebelius case, also known as the Obamacare case, that a federal statute cannot compel states to change their policies by way of a financial gun to the head. That was the exact phrase that Chief Justice Roberts used. And FERPA is understood by many, including the U.S. Department of Education, as enabling the department to entirely defund an educational institution, revoking entitlement to all federal funding if a violation is found. Now, a violation has never actually been found in 42 years and counting of the statute. No one has ever lost any funding. But if it is applied as the U.S. Department of Education claims, then it is the proverbial financial gun to the head. And there is every reason to think that if a case could ever get in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, that the justices would agree. It is challenging to get a FERPA case in front of the U.S. Supreme Court because you're always traveling through the state rather than the federal courts when you're asserting your right to public records. But nevertheless, the court can take cases out of state Supreme Courts, and it would be a fascinating one to see if this case finds itself back in front of the Montana Supreme Court again. And just to introduce one other player in the drama here, Mike, you had the misfortune not only having to litigate this case against the Montana Commissioner of Higher Ed, but also against the U.S. Department of Education themselves. They filed a brief supporting the position of the state in favor of concealment of these records. How influential do you think that their participation was? Was that a difference-making factor to the justices?
I don't think so. In terms of the legal implications of the Department of Education's participation in the case, I don't think it was consequential at all. In terms of the practical implications, it was significantly consequential because one of our best Supreme Court scholars is married to the U.S. attorney, and so when the Department of Education came into the case, she had to recuse herself from this, from participating in the case. And I would have liked to have her legal brain involved in resolving these issues.
Well, that's the frustration of working in a small state where everyone knows everyone, I suppose.
Just one follow-up thing, yeah. And that's why we have been successful in most of the litigation I've been involved in. The courts have required disclosure of documents, and it's in part because we have a small state, and because people know everybody and generally know what's going on, and the courts give really breathe life into our constitutional provision in saying, you know, if the government's going to have any credibility, they've got to disclose what they're doing. And in the long run, that's all Mr. Krakauer is asking for, is why did Jordan Johnson remain in school after the university court and the president had expelled him? And I think that's a significant issue, not only from the perspective of his book, but I think it's important for the people of Montana to know that.
Well, we'll need to wrap it up and end it there, but I want to thank Mike Malloy of the Malloy Law Firm in Helena for being our guest and for being such a consistent and reliable champion of openness in government in the state of Montana. We will all be following with great interest the Krakauer case as it returns to the district court. I should mention that the Student Press Law Center, with the assistance of volunteer attorney Kim Wilson in Montana, did file a friend of the court brief in support of Mr. Krakauer's position favoring disclosure, and we will stand ready again to appear in the case if the case proceeds further on appeal. With that, thanks again, Mike Malloy, for being our guest, and thank you for listening to the Student Press Law Center's podcast and for being a supporter of the SPLC. You can find us online at www.splc.org. We hope you'll subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, that you'll subscribe to our e-newsletter and news flashes, and that you'll keep the SPLC in mind with any question about your legal rights. We're reachable at SPLC@splc.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next month.